And I think no matter how nice your tapware is and how much you spend on your fixtures and fittings, if it's the spaces are the wrong dimensions and the spatial planning's all out and doesn't have good flow, your home will never feel good to live in.
Welcome to the Renovating Australia podcast, where we'll take you on site with industry leaders, experts, and everyday people who've mastered DIY or just giving it a go.
If you're starting a renovation, building a new house, or just looking for some inspo, we've got you covered.
Before we get started, everything we talk about on this podcast is general in nature and does not take into account your own personal situation. If you're looking to get advice, please seek the help of a licensed financial advisor or professional consultant.
So let's renovate Australia.
Today's episode is another pre-record, so an update for you all. Katie and baby Billy are doing really well. I will nudge her to share some baby spam over on the gram. Today's episode, we are sitting down with our faves from Zefyrin Stone, and the content of this episode is incredible. But I do want to preface that we lost all of our connectivity with Zoom right at the start of this one. So if you hear us talk over each other, it's because we were running pretty blind. Regardless, there is so much gold in here. We talk about the entire Zefyrin Stone journey right from the start, how they got started, how they self-taught all of the knowledge they have today. There are some game-changing tips for your kitchen layout and the number one splurge that you must all have for your home. There's so much goodness, so let's dive straight in. Hi guys, and welcome back to the Renovating Australia podcast. I am your co-host, Alicia Chapman, and joined as always by our very pregnant now, Katie Caudry. Hello.
Hello guys, welcome back. I know I have quite a bump now, so I'm out of that awkward, is she fat or like that face.
Amazing. So we have some guests on the podcast that we have been dying to interview. I know I was saying just before we started recording, I was going through all their tips and I've actually made a whole heap of changes to our renovation because their advice is just that good. So we have Kasia and Anya from Zefyrin Stone. So welcome to the podcast, guys.
Hi, Alicia. How are you?
Hi. Thanks. Thanks for having us.
So exciting. Amazing. So the story behind it all, we'd love to hear in your own words, who is Zefyrin Stone? How did it come about? What's your story and how did you get here today?
Well, I guess we never planned Zefyrin Stone in the past. I was always living in Melbourne and Anya was always living in Queensland and the Gold Coast for well over a decade. So whilst we were both doing the same thing, building, renovating, designing, we never considered working together. And it wasn't until I moved to the Gold Coast, also like 38 weeks pregnant, about 3.5 years ago. And we just over conversation, we're having a conversation about how our businesses were moving in the same direction. We were both considering moving onto social media and starting an Instagram account. And over a wine, we just decided to join forces and see where it would take us working together.
I think even stepping back further than that, we were both absolutely like just obsessed with property from our late teens. Like we were 18 and 19 and going to property seminars and everything else. And we actually went to uni and like this is our second career really, design and building, because we actually both did a nursing degree, but literally at the same time we're already buying properties, renovating them. So we actually started off like a lot of people do. If you don't go straight down the design avenue, you know, we start off in our early 20s buying property, renovating, and then turn that into building, developing. Husbands got their building licenses because they were both, you know, the same way. And then we sort of more formally educated ourselves as well in design, and then we were, you know, taking on clients. So there was always that property and design and building and flipping houses. It was always something that we loved. And, you know, but then where Zefyrin Stone is today, it's actually been a really gradual, slow journey, you know, just evolved over time.
It's so amazing. And I've got a really funny question because I can't imagine, and I love them both so much, but I could not imagine working with my sisters. What's it like working together on the daily?
It's really good. It has its moments like any sort of sister relationship would, but we complement each other very well and we both have very different roles within the business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're not in each other's pockets all day long. We are, you know, looking after our own sections of the business. So when we do sort of talk business and talk shop, it's fabulous to get feedback and be able to be honest. And we're very upfront with each other and we say it as it is, which only sisters can, I think.
Yeah, that is true.
But then also, yeah, but it's also good to also have our own thing within the business as well.
Yeah, I think there was a time where we were both trying to do the same thing when we really didn't have a business plan where we started out, you know, because it was so organic. You know, it's grown organically. And we started Zephyr and Stone. We sort of always knew we were going to build a brand and we were going to do design, and the social media just sort of evolved. But, you know, we didn't actually have roles as such. So that was something we did have to develop. And since we did that, it's obviously been a really nice, smooth ride. And, you know, a bit bumpy occasionally.
Most of the time.
But, you know, we actually get along really well. You know, out of work, we're just best friends.
Yeah.
And then at work sometimes, you know, like we'll be like really stubborn and both want to do something, but one of us wins the argument every day. So we're pretty, yeah, it's great working together.
I love that. And I think it'd kind of be good as well, because I know with my sisters, I don't have a filter. And, you know, some of the office politics and things, it just would go away because it's awful. Yeah. But also it would be very productive at the same time that I could just say, oh, God, just stop. Like, you know, you don't have to be that sensitive with your siblings.
Yeah, so true. There's definitely no filter between us. We both say exactly what we mean and exactly how we're feeling. So we're very honest with each other, with each other's designs. And so that's great. It's actually, you know, it's better than beating around the bush and not getting feedback from somebody else that's honest.
And I think with design as well, like, you know, if either of us are designing something, we know we can get honest feedback on a design. You know, no one's going to not say something because they're, you know, scared of hurting your feelings. It's the opposite where you're sort of like, just be a bit kinder if that's not that bad. You know, please be nice. No, so it's actually very productive. And we actually have recently built a number of staff that now work with us for our client and design projects. And we sort of try and bring that same sort of ethos into our work with them. Like, you know, be honest, anyone can say anything. There's no, you know,
you
always speak up if you think something doesn't work or anything else. I think
that collaborative approach is really effective with design particularly. Because everybody brings something to the table and everyone sees the design differently and everyone, you know, has a different set of experiences. They know a certain set of products. And so all together combined, you have a much better design.
Yeah, get a better result.
100%. And speaking of design, like I feel personally, you know, I think I've saved every image that you put up. I'm like, yes, that one, love that one, and save them all. I think, you know, your design is always, I feel, ahead of the curve and it's very sophisticated and cutting edge. I know it was a little while ago, but do you feel like your time in Melbourne might have influenced that?
Yeah, so most of our clients are Melbourne and Sydney based, and a lot of our audience are Melbourne and Sydney based. I guess our design is not considered very Gold Coast, or you might say very GC. So it's definitely more sophisticated, I think. And I guess that is just growing up in the inner city of Melbourne. And, you know, we were sort of building and renovating in those suburbs, and that was kind of like, you know, I wear black a lot, just like Melbourneans do. And, yeah, I guess that really affects, you know, your design and the way you design and I guess your aesthetic. So I do think it's definitely had an influence. But then we also love to bring in some of that indoor-outdoor living that's so popular up here on the Gold Coast and in Brisbane. So I think it's
a good mix. Actually, I'm not sure if I agree with Kasia. Like, it does definitely influence, I'm sure, but I think so many things influence the design. Like, I haven't lived in Melbourne since I was 23 or 22, 23. So, I travel a lot with, you know, you go overseas, you go to Europe. I mean, I went to Peru last year, and the architecture there, the internal courtyards and everything, that was a huge influence. So I think it's a combination of where you live, what you see, and these days, because there's so much digital information, you know, that really influences, you know, your design or ideas as well. But I think our style is just our style. And I think obviously it's been influenced by where we've lived, but I think it's a combination of things, and maybe European upbringing, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think Melbourne definitely, it seems to be more Melbourne than Gold Coast, but I don't know, there's a lot of people that we're working with now on the Gold Coast and in Brisbane. It's changing here as well. So, yeah.
Well, we're growing up originally, and we love it up here. So I guess, you know, everyone, there's a lot of people that are moving up here now and bringing their style and their loves and their taste with them.
Exactly,
so
right.
It's just always evolving.
Yeah, exactly.
Ladies, take us a step back, I guess, and let's go back and look at your very first project for someone else. What was it? Do you really want to go there? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Give us the goss. What was it? Who did it involve? How did it all come together?
I think there's been, it's hard to think about what the very first, like, I think one of the first places that I would call a project was, you know, when I was about 24, bought a Queenslander in Mackay. And it was over 100 years old, and we literally stripped, my husband and I stripped it out and I did the tiling, painting, sealed every single one of the BJ boards. So, like, you know, that was my first project. And I painted two or three rooms different colours, and they were probably primary colours or maybe tertiary, but, you know, the colours were terrible. I don't know, you know, I've really grown through my experience as a designer. I did things that I look back and I go, was I not thinking? But, you know, I don't know whether I was too in the project even thinking. I mean, in fairness to myself, we're on such a small budget. We literally went we went, oh, that's the best mist tint that we can get, half price paint, let's go. But, you know, that was my first project, like, you know, 15 years ago. So grown a lot since then, and we did a lot of flipping, and then we didn't paint yellow walls anymore.
And I guess one of my first big projects was in my 20s. We bought a block of 8 units that were derelict, and we had, you know, homeless people living inside them, and my husband quit his job and we moved into there full time with our dog and spent 3 months fully painting, renovating a double story block of 8 units. So we've certainly been there and done the hard yards. That was the same. We did the full reno. So I guess that's where our experience sort of stems from. And then it's all gone uphill from there. Thank goodness.
Yeah, thank God.
I think that's where we get, you know, like for us, when we first sort of established Zephyr and Stone and sort of joined forces, we looked around, we went, oh, God, there's all these people sharing styled images and of spaces. And we were like, oh, yeah, we can talk about what we had for breakfast and things like that, because we actually enjoy reading, you know, people that we know. But then very quickly we went, no, this isn't us. And we started sharing the tips and things like that. Because that's just what we've done for so many years. That's what felt natural. And I think those tips and all that information has come from doing everything from, you know, like ripping off wallpaper and stuff to, you know, the end where now we just, like, you know, because now we've both got building companies. So, and we have had for like 5-10 years. So we just do all interior design. We've worked with clients. We obviously on site when we do our own projects, we're on site every day. With all the trades, I've always asked every single question, you know, the simple questions. So that's where all those tips and everything has come from. So it's gone from literally start at the bottom and doing the basics to more like project management and development and then the design.
And I guess like having done it yourselves too, like you've been through every single step of the way and you know exactly what's coming and what's around the corner.
Yeah.
Is there anything like a little golden nugget of advice, or what is possibly one of your biggest learnings from doing it yourself?
Just never underestimate the importance of planning. I think it's the most important thing. Like so many clients come to us or we just see people who spend so much on their mistakes, you know, they've basically lost or wasted money, the cost of actually fixing things that were just done incorrectly to start with. And sometimes people think they can't either afford a designer or some advice, and then they end up thinking that that actually would have been the smarter and cheaper option if you feel out of your depth and you don't actually know what to do. So,
definitely. And also I suppose part of the planning is the floor plan and things like that. If you're looking, focusing at your home, you know, so many homes that you go into and they're renovated, and people might spend like $100,000, $200,000, $500,000 renovating a house, and they just didn't fix the things that were really wrong with it. Mm-hmm. You know, like the floor plan, the natural light and the airflow. When you go into a house and you say, oh, it's got great bones, and you go, well, literally I could just paint and everything and it's fixed, you should first get the good bones and then spend your money doing that and then, you know, do the other things. So yeah. I think there's no point like renovating something that's really, you know, not ideal. You just won't get the same returns and
the same result.
Yeah, the same result.
And I think no matter how nice your tapware is and how much you spend on your fixtures and fittings, if it's the spaces are the wrong dimensions and the spatial planning's all out and doesn't have good flow, yeah, your home will never feel good to live in. Yeah, I think that's for us, we see a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, and what Karsha said then, like the planning, and that space planning is so important, having the right distance between your island bench and kitchen. The laundry, you know, having that the right depth for your bench top so your appliances actually fit in underneath. Those little things, like having enough room between the dining table and, you know, island bench, if you've got them opposite each other, all those, it, and if having all those things in the right place, having the right furniture, shapes and sizes for your room are as important as the colours. So, you know, when you combine the colours and the right size of everything and then add the natural light, you know, then it's just, you know, that's the ideal. That so planning is definitely and all those like components of planning, making sure you can tick all those boxes.
The other thing that we see a lot is people undertaking a very extensive, expensive renovation, and they get to the end and they go, it actually would have been cheaper just to knock it down and start again, and we could have got those good bones or the high ceilings we really wanted.
Oh, yeah, so that's what you're right now.
Definitely. And, I mean, it may not be cheaper to rebuild. It doesn't cost a lot more. And it's also the value. Like if you renovate a home and you spend all that money and it's still an older renovated home, like because you can do a renovation where you pretty much, you know, it's almost brand new. But when you're doing that and it's still, it doesn't have the dollar value and you've just spent a little bit less than it would have cost to rebuild, then, you know, it's false economy. So I think that's planning, budgeting, just working out. And it comes to really, because we do a lot of projects and we do developments as well, like small developments like duplexes, you know, five or six pack of townhouses. We work out our costs before we even purchase a block. We go and have a look and go, okay, what's that realistic, not inflated sale price? You know, what's it going to cost us to do anything with this home or project? Even if it's for ourselves, we're going to live in there. Like your circumstances change. So you really, we would never do anything without sort of having an exit strategy. You know, I think what we were talking about before, like our style has also been really, really influenced by the fact that we've been developing, because we've done so many specy projects where we've, you know, pulled down a house and built a duplex, and we've sold both sides of the duplex, or we've rented them out for a short term or long term. And so you want to build something that appeals to 80% of the market, and then you're also looking to build something that in 10 years' time will still be current. So I think that's where our design has really been influenced by, because all our homes, that's what we do. We're like, okay, 80% of people are going to walk in and they're not going to find any colours offensive. You know, in 10 years' time, we need to resell. The colours are still neutral, so it still works, you know, for clients. And we would, when we were actually doing Hampton style project of our own at the moment, but it's still restrained. It's very
contemporary.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but there's nothing wrong with doing those styles. That's just, you know, how we've sort of developed, I think, what we do and how we work.
In terms of keeping things current, like we always stick to neutrals for like our hard finishes. So even though you might love bright green or pink, we would never, generally speaking, have our bench tops or our joinery or our tiles and hard finishes in those sort of colours. We really do stick to neutrals, which I guess is our style, because it is timeless. And then we can accentuate with furnishings and cushions and a rug, etc., artwork, if we really want to bring in that colour.
And our own homes are the same. Like I've got a lot of artwork in my home and there's a lot of colour in that, but everything else is just neutral, because I think, you know, you might have then some coloured cushions on your couch which you can replace. And it's just long-term. Like our ethos is very much quality over quantity, and I'd rather spend $10,000 on a couch than buy lots of little pieces. And, you know, I'd be happy just have a rug, coffee table and couch and have nothing else in the space, yet have everything beautiful and last. And when you are spending money like that on, you know, furnishings, you need it to last a long time. So you definitely opt for neutrals. And you also want it to be able to then go, you know, in 5 years' time, be able to, or a few years' time, update the cushions or change your style or with the season. So using that neutral base means you can change your artwork, you can change those things. You know, it's cheaper to change your artwork than your sofa. And it also means it's environmentally, you know, you're not replacing your sofa every few years. So
love that. That is such incredible advice. And I know I mentioned earlier about like scrolling through your Instagram and just reading and absorbing all of the tips and information's there. You also have tip sheets and some tools on your website that you actually give to people. Was all of that stuff that you have learned along the way, you know, you mentioned before with your projects, asking all the questions and just teaching yourself and learning as much as you can. Is that where all of this knowledge has come from?
Our project tracker, which is probably our most popular product, which, you know, is a budgeting tool where you can literally work out how much a project will cost. Then you can get quotes and put those in. And then there's a separate column where you can actually then, as you're paying for things, put the amount in. So you can see how it compares. And then you've always got a running record of where your project stands. That's something we actually created ourselves years ago, and it's just developed, and then we tweaked a little bit and turned it into a product, because we've used that for years. Because, you know, when you're doing a project, when you are flipping, you need to know how much it's going to cost. You need your budgets.
Oh, you always need to know how much it's going to cost you.
No, yeah. When it's your own home, yeah. and it's a forever home, you know, if you've got the money there and you end up spending, you know, a bit more on your flooring, it's not the end of the world. But if it's a project and you're selling, you know, because we did that, that was our income for years and years. We've never really worked. Well, I haven't worked, you know, for anyone, and just that's what we did as a job. So that's where that tool came in. And the others are sort of like our blogs. We just write those from our experience and knowledge. Yeah. You know, yeah. They're just literally like this verbal diary that's occurring now. It's the same sort of thing. It's just, you know, all those tip sheets and everything is literally just about all the things we've learned. And some of them, you know, trial and error. You know, some of them we've spoken to trades and they've said, oh, this is how you do this. And others, it's just like, you know, you've done this and that didn't work, so you did it this way. And that's, I think, you know, the tips. I remember Kasia when we started Zephyr and Stone and we were doing the tips, and Kasia said, like, I really want Zephyr and Stone to be what I needed when I was, you know, 21 or whatever, and I was renovating that first block of units. And I really want Zephyr and Stone to be that resource that I didn't have. Most people love sharing information, and we're no different to anyone else. We love sharing it, and that's what those tip sheets and blogs and everything are, basically all those crazy, you know, little details that we've learned over the years on site.
And I guess our color schemes, which are really popular products that we created. So years ago when we were learning, we weren't, you know, I couldn't call myself a designer yet by any stretch, and you know, I was given the job to select all the colors and all the finishes and everything for our projects. And I, you know, would scroll through, these are the early days of Instagram, scroll through, and I always felt intimidated to ask designers, oh, what product did you use there and what finish and what's that timber, you know, batten called and where did you get it? How much does it cost? And I always used to think, wouldn't it be great if I could just recreate that design, because it's exactly what I want. I don't want to have to ask somebody. I just want to, you know, could I just, if I could just download it, that would be an amazing product. So that's actually one of the reasons that Zephyr and Stone became what it was, because of that early thinking. And so what we did, we created these products. They've actually got links to shop, the look. So people see a space and they go, wow, that's exactly what I want. I want the tile. I want that. It's even got the colour of the grout, the colour of the silicon, the laying pattern, like all the details that you need. And then it also, on all the images, there are links so you can click and it takes you straight to the website to the product. So just all those little details, even like what's the profile of your curve on your shower screen, you know, questions that we will continually get. So all the information is there, and, you know, I mean, they cost dollars. So it's literally download them and you've got all the information there and a resource. You can print it out. You can give it to your builder, and some of them have even got joinery plans. So our actual cabinetry plans, you can just give it to your cabinet maker and they'll make exactly the same thing.
That is incredible. Like, it is so good. Katie, you were just about to say it's amazing.
It is amazing. And we'll definitely add some links into the show notes for the episode as well, because I think like the resources available on your website are just phenomenal. And even back to the budget, like spreadsheet thing, for people that don't actually know what they're doing or it's their first renovation, sometimes half these people have never even opened Excel before or used a program like that. So to have something that's kind of, you know, been done for them and they can just sort of plug and play and sort of go from there is amazing.
Yeah, and I think even building on that, like the fact that you guys have got these resources and these tools and you've taught yourself, I think, again, it's just something I love about the community that you can just, you know, if you really want to do this, it can feel overwhelming and daunting, but you guys have done it. Like you are, you know, walking representation that this is not impossible. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, you're either, if it's the direction you want to go, like, always encourage people to do it. It's, you know, it is hard in the beginning. Like anyone, like you've renovated a house, you know, it's, you know, there's the pretty pictures and then there's the reality of the late nights and, you know, dropping paint in your hair and everything else. Yeah. Like, but it is very satisfying. And, you know, then you've got the end result and it is very, it's very addictive. Like you do one reno, it's really hard to not, you know, unless you hate it, it's really hard not to go back and do another one or, you know, go down that avenue. Actually, I was going to say when you were saying with the spreadsheets, the Excel spreadsheets, that was actually when we developed the actual product, one of the things we did was actually lock a lot of the columns and the cells because that's what we found. Like not everyone can use Excel. So, you know, you're not going to make a mistake and change the formula and you can unlock them, but, you know, they're locked so that it's really, really easy to use. You just like basically plug a figure in and it, you know, changes the running total. And the great thing about that is as well, like some people go, oh, I can't afford this or I can't afford that. Then they go, well, you can actually go in, hey, I really want this oven. You put that in. And then you go, what about if I drop the price of this or I take this out and I put the oven in? And you, and sort of you can literally see what, how much it's going to cost in that whole running total all the time. So, you know, we couldn't be without it when we, especially in the early days when we were doing projects and you've got a tight budget, it's invaluable.
And also a lot of people who are starting out, they don't even know what they don't know. So they don't really know. A lot of people go,
what do they know?
Oh, look, I think this bathroom will cost me about 20 grand. And if you actually dig a bit deeper and say, look, where did that come from? And they go, I really don't know. I just don't even know. You know, they're trying to add up a few products, but they don't, the things that they don't know what products they're going to use. They might add up the mirror, the taps, the sink and the vanity, but they haven't thought of waterproofing. They haven't thought of, you know, grouting. They haven't, you know, there's so many different aspects that they haven't even considered. So I think it's a really good product for that. So
yeah, because
you'll have a realistic expectation of how much you're going to spend.
Because the project tracker, actually the budget tracker, does in itself have all those things listed. So it's got a prompt and you don't have to put those in. They may not be relevant, but literally 95% of the things you'll need in a bathroom is written there already. So, you know, you just slot in, okay, waterproofing, I got that. So you don't have to go and add all those items. They're already there. So that's where you might go, oh, you know, you can say, do I need waterproofing? It's almost like a guide to say, what could I possibly need in my bathroom? And then, you know, you can get those quotes or, you know, speak to someone about those.
I think it's like one of the first steps in when you start thinking about your renovation and in that planning phase of, you know, how much is this thing going to cost me? Because it's just, you're right, there's no way to know. And, I mean, we were the same. We were pie in the sky. Oh, yeah, cool, we'll spend 25 grand here. Oh, kitchen should be about 30 grand. And then when we actually had a builder come through, he was like, oh, sorry, you want this? Okay, that's about 45 to 50 grand. And we're like, oh, my God.
Yeah. You're like, where did that number come from? Exactly. Where did I ever think of that? I know we were doing the same the other day. We were laughing. And even just our conversation before about knockdown rebuild instead, I've realized we have an extraordinarily expensive hallway because that's the only part of this original house that we're keeping. Is this tiny hallway with the original front door and the rest of the house is gone and been renovated and replaced with something new. So, of course, it's going to cost as much as it's costing. But when we first started, we're like, oh, it's just a small reno, raise it up, add a few bedrooms. Yeah. It's like, oh, no, we have
it always happens. Yeah. It's still worthwhile doing. I mean, there's different costs with building and things like that. But and that's that whole planning and going through that. Brother, I was actually speaking to a client about this today because they've got this dilemma and it's, you know, you sort of almost have to weigh up, well, hey, look at the figures and how much will the reno realistically cost me? Get a, like a proper, you know, within reason quote. And then how much will a new build cost me? And then what's the end value of the product as well? Like, will the renovated home have good value in it? Because as I was saying before, you know, you can renovate and have almost a brand new home or you can renovate and still have an old home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, dollar for dollar, what sort of return you're going to get if you do come to sell or just even how much your home's worth.
Yeah. 100%. So when we were doing our research for this pod, Anya, we read an interview that you did a little while ago. I think it was with Interiors Addict, and you mentioned that cabinetry and interior architecture was your passion, which definitely, looking at the things that you execute so well between the two of you, it is 100%. You nail it. Like, there is no question. Everything that you do inside is amazing. Do you have, you know, something that you feel is the most important inclusion or consideration to have with a kitchen?
I think that's evolved over time. I mean, now I really see the kitchen as, I don't look at a kitchen as a kitchen. I look at it as like a multitasking space. And then I try and, you know, make sure I create zones and then meet a whole lot of needs in the kitchen. Because you think about your kitchen, you entertain, you want to be able to cook, you want to have like a gourmet kitchen, you want to have amazing storage, you want to be able to entertain, you want to be able to do homework or have a, you know, with COVID, you want to have a meeting in your office. So when I design a kitchen, or in Kasha's the same, we really try and design a space that will basically meet all those different needs and is really multitasking. And that's where integration is really important. You know, having things that you can hide away. So when people come over, or if you are, you know, having a meeting or using it as an office space, you don't have to be looking at, you know, a pantry or anything like that. You can just close it and it can look a lot more like furniture. And I think that really makes sense as well, as, you know, around the world, but in Australia where our homes are so open plan and the kitchen's very often attached to the living room and dining area, you don't necessarily want to, you know, have a working kitchen, chef's kitchen on display all the time. So, you know, that design, and that all comes down to what we're talking about before, planning. Like, you literally, your first step with any design and kitchen design is planning and problem solving, going, okay, I want to cook, I want to look out this window, I want to do, okay, the sink has to be within the triangle. And you plan where all those main things are. You know, a scullery, you know, sculleries is the biggest thing that I see people make mistakes with, because they literally end up creating a second kitchen. And that's great if that's what you want and you, you know, you entertain and you have someone come, a caterer come in or something like that. But most of us just at home, you know, doing dinner for the family every night. So generally you want your scullery to be really well connected to your kitchen. It can even be open if it's beautiful and, you know, inside. It doesn't have to be closed, but, you know, ideally you have maybe a door so you can shut it, but really good connection so you don't end up with two kitchens. And then, you know, because then you might need two cutlery drawers, you need two bins, you need a lot of other things that you don't consider, because you're in one space and then you need the other. So planning, working out those, where those core working zones should be. And then from there, then you go, okay, well, how am I going to hide this? How am I, you know, and then you integrate all the storage around it and, you know, keep things like your sink really central. The cooktop doesn't need to be. It can be sort of a little bit off to the side, but your sink, you really want to have central and have a lot of your high use storage around your sink, and because that's obviously the dishwasher's next to the sink. So you want to have your high use storage around there because you aren't with the dishwasher. You know, you want to have all that close at hand so you're not walking miles to unload the dishwasher.
Yeah. And I think like all of that comes back to livability, right? Like you want it to be easy for someone to live in. And it's not just building a spec home and doing what the plan says. It's thinking about those extra things. Like I remember one of our previous podcast guests, Jasmine from Timber and White, she was building her kitchen and she was measuring her sauce bottles so she could have the right heights in her pantry.
Really? And that's what we do. We do that. Yeah. And I literally have a measuring tape and I use it every day, even though, you know, we know all these standard heights, we still measure them. We still measure things all the time because it really helps you visualize and, you know, make sure you're planning the right solutions for either that client or for yourself or for that space. So, and I think the other thing that's really relevant to when you're designing a space is to really design the space for the tasks you want. Like, you know, people say, oh, we never eat around the we don't eat around the dining table. We end up eating around the bench. Maybe dining table isn't great. Like, not that it's not great, but it's not connected well. It's not a beautiful space. If you have a beautiful big round dining table, you will use it and it's in the right place and it's got light. So you might live one way in one home, but when you're designing a new home and you design different spaces, you will live completely differently based on, you know, what you have. Like in my own home, Akasha's got some, you know, a similar design. We've got a Long Island bench, and on the end of our island bench, we've got the, you know, integrated dining. It just turns into a dining table. And we use those. When you do that in your kitchen, you will use that space. So then that becomes a real entertaining zone. So you create what you want or how you want to live, you really go, and when we work with clients, there's the most value in developing a design brief. That's so important, and you always refer back to, and you almost have to do your own design brief when you start off. You go, well, how do I want to live? How do I want my home to feel? And then when you're designing things and you're really stuck and you're like, oh, then you go back to, you know, it might be in your head or you might have written it down. You go back to, well, no, that's not going to solve, that's not going to, you know, create what I want. So then it might be very easy to make a decision when you're stuck on something.
Yes, 100%. And I think, yeah, again, coming back to livability, but also thinking in that planning, everything comes back to planning and looking at what you've got to work with. So I love that.
Yeah.
Kasia, do you have a space or an element of the project planning that you love the most or, you know, get the most enjoyment out of?
It's definitely joinery design now as well. So it's definitely changed from the past. I was always into your furnishings. But one of the things that I'm really passionate about now is laundries, actually, and incorporating like a drying cupboard or a drying room in laundries, which I believe is the next big thing. Just like a few years ago, you had a scullery or a butler's pantry that was, you know, the latest thing to hit, and suddenly all the big builders were doing it, and now it's just a standard inclusion. And I think the same thing is happening with drying cupboards and drying rooms. So gone are the days where you're happy to have your little plastic clothes air dryer, you know, in your dining room, in your living room, out and about with like piles of most dining tables. People use them to dry clothes or they have piles of ironing on there. So I think having a good laundry with enough space and a dedicated space to dry your clothes out of sight, I think that's just huge because you don't want to see it. Nobody wants to see. You can design this beautiful house, but if you haven't considered the whole washing and drying situation, you'll end up with clothes all over your home, particularly if you've got kids and a family.
Yep. I've seen it so many times before.
Oh, my gosh.
It's funny. Dining tables. Yeah.
That's like the perfect spot.
Always the way. Oh, my gosh. I am hanging out to have a laundry. It's just going to be the most exciting thing. I don't think I've had a laundry, oh, my gosh, for probably 7 years. It's since we've actually had a laundry.
That's a long time. I like to complain because I haven't had a dishwasher for 3 or 4 years now. How I've survived, I don't know.
It was there was 5 years when we were renovating a double-fronted Art Deco home in Windsor in Melbourne for over 5 years, and I had no toilet for 3 months. I had kitchen or dishwasher for 5 years, no laundry ever.
Oh my gosh!
So
you did that kitchen when you sold
I did
it.
That kitchen to sell at the end.
Oh my god.
They are the worst projects. Oh my gosh,
totally.
Here I am like, poor me, I don't have a
boy. It's relevant though. It is. We've been
there and done that.
No, it's you know, that's you know, when you've got no laundry, it is hard. Or anything that you have to live with, especially if you've got a friend and you go to their place and you're like, they're complaining about the washing and the laundry, you're like, at least you've got one.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, no.
One of my top tips for kitchen design, and I really sort of encourage all my clients always to consider whether they would consider a second dishwasher. Mm. So I know a lot of particularly high-end homes, people always go, oh, and I want a second oven. And I say, okay, well, how often are you going to use it? Well, probably once or twice a year, realistically. Mm. Okay, well, how often will you use a second dishwasher? Every single day, I tell you. So both Anya and I both have a second dishwasher, and we use like a dish drawer, a tall dish drawer, as our second dishwasher. So that when one is full or it's either going or the items in it are drying, rather than collecting a whole pile of dishes in your sink, you're filling up the next one. So then you're not having to ever dry dishes or anything because you just let them dry in there, then you just put them away and you've always got one dishwasher going. And particularly if you've got kids and a family, you'll use it every single day, unlike a second oven, although that's great if you need a second oven or you're a good cook. But most people don't.
If you have to choose, I'd totally be choosing the second dishwasher. And getting one of those, like, you know, a tall. We use the Fisher & Paykel tall dish drawers because they actually fit. Like, you know, you can fit like 12, I think 18 champagne flutes. I haven't counted, but you know, you can fit so many champagne flutes, wine glasses. So you know, when you're entertaining as well, you're like, well, that, you know, you don't have those, you know, 20 glasses lined up on the bench the next morning, and you're like, okay, because you know, the dishwashers don't store those as well. So I think
that's just so such a great use of like that extra bit of budget rather than that second oven. And you know, when you go to buy a home, you don't go, oh, two ovens, tick. You know, people, it's all about the finishes and the space, how it feels, and you know, and that it's quality. So people go, oh, it doesn't need two ovens, it's a really big home. Well, yeah, I mean, it can help to sell the home, but I don't think anyone's not going to buy a home in that location because it hasn't got a second oven. If it's that important, they'll put it in.
For sure. Speaking of Fisher Paykel, for example, is there any brands or suppliers that you guys work with that you just absolutely love and cannot recommend enough?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're actually brand ambassadors for Hedic, so Hedic Australia. So Hedic are a German hardware company. So we have used them for over 10 years, and it really goes back to this quality over quantity and, you know, buy it once or designing it once and doing it right. So really, because we love integrated joinery so much, it just is so important. It really takes your design to the next level to be able to hide things away. It's just using things over and over again, and they work perfectly every time. So we never like to cut costs on things that you're constantly using day in, day out. So any of those high-use items, I think it's just so important just to buy quality, because it really, you know, you might save a little bit, you know, buying like a Chinese ripoff or something, but you'll end up replacing it, and really you could have just got the better quality finish to start with.
And it's the same with Bremworth carpets. You know, we've used them for so many years. We love their carpets. Well, we love wool carpets, but, you know, we had used Bremworth a lot because we loved the colours and the textures. Yeah. So, you know, that's another supply that we, you know, anything like we really value being authentic. And, you know, when you meet us and you speak to us, that's the way we, you know, speak to people. So that's the way we are with our social media and everything else, and with our any brands we work with. Like, you know, we love their products, and we don't just work with brands and affiliate ourselves with someone because, you know, we can get, you know, a free rug or something like that. It has to be really, really great quality for us. We always try and work with brands that we would actually become a business partner of their business, basically. Like, that's how we see all, that's how we sort of look at all our brand partners, if that makes any sense.
100%. And I love that. And I do think that comes through so much in everything that you do, is it's very, very authentic and genuine. So the last question to wrap everything up, and, you know, there's been so much advice in here, and we will pop in the show notes where to find you. But what do you think we're going to see for the rest of 2021 and onwards from there? What sort of design trends are you playing with or seeing in the space?
Lots of things.
We don't follow trends very much.
No, you set them.
As we said before, we do like to set them, but it's more like, you know, we do try and stitch the new tools and things like that. But we are continuing to see a lot more of those organic shapes and natural, a lot of warmer textures, warmer materials.
Absolutely.
I think any way that you can replicate nature in your home, particularly now with everyone being locked away, you know, with COVID and with urbanization and, you know, being restricted getting out into nature, I really think that there's a lot more of trying to make your home your sanctuary with all of that, and just curved joinery.
And I think that's not only just that, you know, that's the finishes that you're going to use, but it's also the actual design elements. Like, for me, we've got a number of projects, you know, our Hamptons project, we've got a 50 Shades of Grey project, we've got a number of projects we're working on at the moment, which you'll sort of see towards the end 50 of this
shades.
Year. But the other thing that we're an exciting project for us is that I'm building a holiday house on South Stradbroke Island, which I'm just actually designing at the moment. And when I think about the design of that, it's actually very, for me, it's very minimal and clean lines. So I think that's where my personal, and Harsh is very much the same, so we're really very similar with our style. It's very clean lines, a lot of natural materials and a lot of materials rather than just gyprock white walls. A lot of texture and, you know, open spaces and, you know, internal courtyards and things like that. You'll see, you know, a number of internal courtyards in the home. So it's very, our style is very much organic, natural finishes, and now
the indoor-outdoor lifestyle.
Clean lines.
Spaces that actually feel really good to live in. Because no matter, you might try and follow a trend, but do ask yourself if you're going to be following it in your home, is this going to make me feel good every day living in a home like this? Like, it's not just walking through a department store and going, oh, wow, I love this. You know, it feels, it looks really nice. How's it going to be to live in, to entertain in, to help your kids with their homework in, et cetera? So I think anything that feels really good to live in and replicates nature, you really can't go wrong.
And it's calming. Like, you want to walk into a space and just feel like you can wind down. You know, yeah, it doesn't have to be home sweet home, you know, cottage style, but you do want to feel, you know, because it's like, but you actually want that home sweet home, the relaxed feeling where you're like, you know, but you want it in sort of obviously a much more like a resort feel, a really uncomplicated is, that's I think the style.
Yeah.
Less is more. Yeah, uncomplicated. And that's where the minimal and clean lines come from, where, you know, we've got so much in our lives. We're so busy. Everything's so, you know, pollution, everything else. I know they're just little things, but it's what we sort of experience outside. So more and more we want our homes to be the complete opposite, like a real sanctuary. So.
Yeah. A cocoon.
Yes.
Yep. Absolutely.
A neutral cocoon.
Love it.
Well, thank you so much, ladies, for being on the podcast today. I mean, we've certainly learned a lot, and I can't wait to share some of those tips and tricks sheets as well with our guests. But before we go, where can people find you?
I think our website, zephyrandstone.com.au, is probably the best place. That's where you'll find all of our blogs, free tip sheets, all of our project tools. We also have a future schedule. We're about to release some for all spaces, bathroom, kitchen, laundry cheat sheets. So how high do I put my tap? How high should I do my shower screen?
Oh,
how far away from the walls my bath? Like all of those, just so you know and you don't make those mistakes. Then there's also, I guess, Pinterest. If you're pinning away for your dream reno, is where we're quite popular on our account on Pinterest, but also Instagram is where you find us a lot. That's probably where we engage with our audience the most.
Yeah, that's where we're there regularly, you know, where people ask us questions and things like that. But then for resources, definitely our website. And our website's also got the search tool. So if you're like looking for something in particular, you don't have to go through every single blog. You can go, or is there a blog on tiles or tiling or, you know, grout or something like that? You can just put that into the search icon. And we've also got our online store. So, you know, we do sell select furniture that's just, you know, people ask us about every day, where can I get this, where can I get that? So it's a real curated collection of neutral, beautiful pieces that we love and that we've used in home. So,
And then we also have a mailing list. So we do every couple of weeks do share tips and things that we don't share anywhere else with our faves. So,
with our
audience
and their family.
Oh, it is so good. And you just, as we said at the start, you're so generous with all of this knowledge. And, you know, as I said before, I've learned so much and I can't wait to continue learning from you guys. So thank you for on behalf of everyone who you've helped. It's just so incredible what you're doing and we all appreciate it. I know I have so much. So thank you again for being on the pod and talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode. If you liked it, don't forget to hit subscribe and share the episode with your reno friends.
If you're looking for like-minded people, come and join us in our private Facebook group. Or follow us on the gram at renovating_Australia. See you next time.